Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Oh, g'day, man. How you going? G'day and welcome to the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, and tonight we're going to be looking at the next evolution of the Karate Kid. And of course, the Karate Kid being Cobra Kai. Yes, the TV show which started out as a YouTube sensation on their YouTube streaming platform, but also now has been bought out by Netflix. And Netflix now have done the third and fourth seasons, and you can obviously get the fourth season very, very soon here. And it's going to be an amazing thing to watch because we're going to get to see another evolution of the Karate Kid franchise come back in the form, of course, Terry Silver. But tonight we're going to celebrate the first two seasons and have a look at, you know, how this little sensation took off and really, I think, changed up the platform and certainly gave a lot more new fans a chance to check out the show and just new viewers in general. And it certainly is one that's been well looked at in terms of people coming to it fresh without seeing the movies. And then they go back and watch, and, you know, obviously the missing element is Mr. Miyagi, as sadly Pat Morita is no longer with us. But we're seeing this new narrative, not the Miyagi-verse narrative, which is something that's going to be very, very interesting. Because now William Zabka, of course, Johnny Lawrence, is the main thrust of the show. It's kind of flipped it on its head where we see now a narrative where Cobra Kai were the good guys and Miyagi and his Daniel-san were the villains of the piece. We're going to be chatting about that and more here tonight on, of course, the one and only Lethal Mullet Podcast. G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favorite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
And I've been working long, long, long days ahead, working in front of a VHS. Ow! You know you got to listen to that little sound. It comes on.
And now, it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. All right, let's get into the news. News is going to be Cobra Kai, of course. We've had third season be such a staunch hit with, obviously, Daniel-san. Of course, Daniel LaRusso going all the way back to Okinawa to kind of refreshen his karate aspect in terms of the fact that he wanted to get to the roots of some of what Miyagi may have left and behind in training, or even Sato in training, who knows. He's going over there, and of course he runs into, of course, Chosen. And it's great to see that we have Chosen kind of play him out for a bit of a joke for a little bit before really showing him that he actually is going to be kind of a sensei to him. You know, he's going to teach him some more stuff that he may not have known of Miyagi-Do karate. So it's great that we see pressure points and other, you know, pretty high-level karate stuff that's probably more akin to Chinese kung fu. In this, we get to see that. And, of course, great to see Chosen back in the series. And hopefully we get to see more of, too, because I'd like to see some type of links with maybe him coming into the American circuit and helping Daniel. And now, of course, also helping Johnny Lawrence. That's where I think things will get interesting as we go along and grow this franchise further and splinter out into, you know, the legacies growing further from just Miyagi-Do and, of course, Cobra Kai. But bringing in the next evolution, which is, of course, the founder, along with, obviously, Kreese, that is, of course, Terry Silver. Thomas Ian Griffith returning to play the role of the tormentor, the serial prankster, but also just, you know, the malevolent emperor of this series, if you like. You know, he's the one that's got pretty much the top dog area. I've always considered him, if this was a Star Wars franchise, he is the Emperor Palpatine of the universe, where Kreese is kind of more a Vader-like henchman character. Still very much rooted in that father and son dynamic with him and Johnny Lawrence, which I find, you know, it is kind of an off-kilter version of the Luke and Anakin sort of struggle in Star Wars. But Terry Silver is probably one of the more interesting characters. We saw a little bit of that in Season 3, obviously looking in the behind the history of these characters in Vietnam, with, of course, Thomas Ian Griffith's character. It played in a younger role. And we get to see, you know, even Kreese's background in that too. So they're sort of, their paths are intertwined, and, you know, it was only no doubt that they would actually get back together in this series. It's just something that's going to happen. And who knows, maybe the stuff from the next Karate Kid, which, I mean, I think I've only seen that film once when I was a kid. So I haven't seen it since, you know, maybe we'll have Michael Ironside's character come to this universe as well. Who knows? Anyway, getting back to it, one of the interesting things in this is with Terry Silver brings in a legitimate martial artist, somebody that's one of the best kickers I've seen on screen. He has the height of Steven Seagal. He has a very athletic and strong, robust build. You know, he's a big guy. And Thomas Ian Griffith, at one stage there, was definitely a go-to action guy, probably one of the last ones in the late 90s. He'd done a lot of work on TV. He'd done, obviously, the role as Terry Silver fairly early on, and then had a chance to, in the mid to late 90s, do quite a few of the action thrillers that were coming out, either straight to video, or at least there was a couple of theatrical releases as well. Excessive Force is probably my favorite, which we've covered here on the network a little bit ago, probably about 8 months ago now. And we're definitely going to be looking at some of his other ones. Like, I quite like his Ulterior Motives, which is definitely more of a thriller than an action piece. But we've also got some other ones which, you know, are definitely worth our time looking at too, which, you know, show him in films with like Rutger Hauer and others as well. Again, he was sort of trying to distance himself, I think, from the martial arts aspect and be just more of a straight-up action sort of figure. But we're talking about a guy who's got an amazing set of skills when it comes to martial artistry. Thomas is a Kenpo karate stylist and also a stylist of Taekwondo as well. So he's got black belts in both those styles. Can you imagine bringing those two together to get a very heavy strike-focused art, but also one that delivers some of the longest kicks, precision spinning kicks, and also some very, very fast hand and, of course, blocking techniques as well, which we know from, you know, great films like The Perfect Weapon, where we see somebody that was Ed Parker's protege, that is Jeff Speakman, doing exactly that, Kenpo karate. Ed Parker, of course, known for bringing that to America. America, you know, basically took an older art that was brought from China to Okinawa and Japan, and then from there, of course, to the Hawaiian Islands. And then this style was modernized, given science, if you like, changed a lot of the terminology and, of course, you know, Americanized the entire thing. And, of course, Ed Parker's karate or American Kenpo began. Students like Elvis Presley, students like, of course, Jeff Speakman, which we know more of now too. And, of course, it's known for its very fast movements and stuff like that, and obviously flurry of blows, you know, 10 hits combos. But they're combos in learning how to use said techniques. But so Thomas used those, particularly in excessive force, which, again, as we covered, is just rich with some great fight scenes, you know, involving not only open hand, which, you know, obviously utilizes those skills, but also then using firearms and stuff like that too, because it was, you know, that age where Steven Seagal and Van Damme and Lundgren, the whole lot of them were doing those sorts of films, and they were on the A-grade. But what's interesting about this is that he was able to really take that grounding that he had and be the head of Cobra Kai. And it's an interesting character. Terry Silver is obviously malevolent, very greedy, and likes to see people in pain. And so I think we're going to see some of this as he gets back with his dear friend, Kreese, and helps him out for a second time in this, which is going to be very, very interesting. So if anything, go and rent out or at least grab your own copy that you've got of Karate Kid 3. Give it a watch again, because I think it's one hell of a gem.
Oi, how's your man?
Welcome to the dojo. Leave your shoes outside the door.
Often I've been asked by people that are not really known for, you know, the likes of karate and other styles, what was used in the Karate Kid? What was used in Cobra Kai for the martial arts? Well, it's not a simple answer. but Miyagi is basically, you know, I think the character itself is based off Miyagi, who created Goju-Ryu Karate. So I believe it was Chojun Miyagi. Back in the 1930s or 40s, if I remember the history right. But basically, Goju means hard, soft. So Go and Ju. So Go is basically, one character, Ju the other, and those together becoming that way. So it's a little like using Judo is the soft way. But of course, Ru means school. So the school of hard and soft, which is very true about what it is. I study a style which is an amalgamation of both Shotokan and Goju-Ryu. So we're using kata from both, and we're using, obviously, too, the techniques, the strikes and stuff like that from both, the blocks, everything. But what's interesting is that you can start to see some of those through the series, particularly what Miyagi teaches and stuff like that too. So some of it's, you know, it is exactly what it is. But again, it uses... particularly the karate master that did a lot of the work on the films, Fumio Demura. His style is actually Shitoru from Okinawa. So particularly, you only get to see a lot of the fights that Miyagi had from behind him, because Demura was doing all the majority of the work. As Pat and Morita would sort of stand off to the side and then come back in for either the front pose or vice versa. But Goju-Ryu is one of the older styles of karate, and of course, you know, it has a link, if you like, to the past as well, to older styles of te or hand in Okinawa. And it's a beautiful style. You can see definitely some of the kata in the third Karate Kid. And this is very, very true of the one that Daniel-san is learning in that one, is one that's very hard and soft. And of course, we're talking about kata that really is the one and only that really shows, I personally think, the strength of Goju-Ryu. So the kata is called Sienchin, and it's one which is based off 45-degree angles, 90-degree, and 180-degree angles, using the actual sumo stance in most moves. So you really working those angles, but also at the same time it's very, very slow and explosive when it needs to be. So it is not so much about the moves itself, but the pace is what Goju-Ryu is all about. It's about pacing oneself, breathing with those techniques, and really being explosive when it needs to be. And there's a lot of that, you know, there's ki-ai in it and stuff like that. But the one we saw in Karate Kid 3 was actually a modified version of the Sienchin. So in a lot of those styles now, you still see these kata, you know, and not just in Goju-Ryu. There's Shotokan that have taken on that kata. There's even Tung Sido and other styles that have used even the first or second katas and a lot of the different karate using, whether it's Taigoku, Nidan, and Shodan, or even you know, some of the others like Cypher, which they're using. But a lot of it can be, you know, modified per the style or vice versa. So it's interesting to see that. But yes, I can definitely see that that's coming through. What we're seeing in Cobra Kai's dojo is much more straight, direct, a little bit more Americanized karate. And of course, it's still classic Shotokan, I think, the way that it was designed. It certainly implies that it's more of a Japanese rigid form of Funakoshi style karate. And I think it's fantastic. Again, the same trainer worked on all the guys, but trained them all differently. And we're talking about one that was a dear friend of Bruce Lee as well. And of course, worked on Enter the Dragon as well. So we'll talk about him a little bit later. But yes, that's the difference of the styles. It's definitely Goju Ryu, which is more of a circular-based style. You can even see some of that influence from some of the circular styles of other martial arts like Aikido and even some of the different takedown techniques of Jiu-Jitsu as well, which are coming through there too. But a lot of that circular system comes from, of course, China and from the original forms of Kung Fu, which come through. And predominantly White Crane is always said to be one of the ones which you know, drove through. I mean, maybe that crane technique is what was coming from Kung Fu. But again, I haven't seen it in Goju Ryu yet, you know. But that's pretty much the style that was used in the Karate Kid films and Cobra Kai.
Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy day, you know. Oh, wow.
Right,
yeah.
Mate. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage and enjoy chatting about, you know, films and all that sort of stuff. You know?
Well, here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
So tonight's episode, we're going to be looking at Cobra Kai and what makes that so an enjoyable series. You know, it really is. It was obviously one, there's continuation of the films, Karate Kid series, all created by Robert Mark Kamen. And he's an interesting character in himself, folks. Robert Mark Kamen is a film producer, a winemaker. Hey, hats off to you, fella. That's pretty good. But he's also, not just that, a screenwriter as well, but a, you know, the creator of the Karate Kid franchise, which I think is really, really interesting. You know, he kind of lived that life of being somebody that was really interested in martial arts, and I think that passion has gone into, obviously, his professional career of making these films. The series, though, here was created by Josh Heald and John Hurwitz and Hayden Schlossberg. Stars, of course, Ralph Macchio back as Daniel LaRusso and William Zabka as, of course, Johnny Lawrence. And it's great to see. I mean, this is 34 years later, and it really looks at the Karate Kid universe in a different light. You know, we're looking at it from the Cobra Kai angle, which I think makes it all worth it because we're getting to see it completely on its side. Now, before we get into that, I want to say that it's great to see that the guys have kind of all through the years kept in touch with each other, and I think is absolutely lovely because they've done things like as early as, I think it was 2011 or maybe even earlier, the ice bucket challenges that were happening. And we got to see Kreese, Johnny Lawrence, and the rest of the guys basically do each other in with ice buckets and say, "We're coming for you, LaRusso," which was always fun. And it's great. Martin Cove has always been, you know, one of the most energetic and I think fun personalities from this franchise, because he not only does he live up to the, you know, the hype when it comes to, you know, seeing him in interviews, TV and stuff like that, but he's just an interesting guy who's got a lot of passion for film and passion for Westerns, I've got to say, folks. He's in one of my favorite Westerns too, playing Wyatt Earp's basically adversary in a scene where he gets taken out by a pool ball. Yes, you know, basically gets thrown at him and basically knocks him in the throat or something like that. And then Kevin Costner's got the line of, "I'm going to take his gun." That's right, this man was going to shoot me down, I'm going to take his gun, okay? Is that all right with y'all? Cove's a real drawback to the old, you know, Western, I think, actors of the old days, as in the old cowboys. And you know, I'd have to check his background as far as like what films he may have done prior to getting into all these sorts of franchise pictures now, but he's certainly been around enough talent that it's rubbed off on him, because he's just great in all he does. Now, he's a karate stylist also. So, you know, obviously it's interesting that, you know, he's able to sort of bring his own background into that too. I do believe it was Okinawan karate or Okinawan te that he was a black belt of, or at least a high grade of as well. So it's part of who he is too. So we've got the legacy of the films, but we've also got this new series, which really centers on you know, the old rivalry back and kind of a turning of the tables, where we see Johnny Lawrence at the start of the first season here, basically without much prospects. You know, he doesn't have much in the way of work. He still has his old car, you know, sports car. He is living in basically a dilapidated apartment. He was married, he had his kid, but they're divorced. And basically he's, you know, going from whatever paycheck he can get to the next paycheck. We're really seeing it through his eyes, but he's really living up the old 80s is the best times, you know, sort of lifestyle. Flip side is Daniel LaRusso owns LaRusso Motors, and he is a successful car salesman. And he's got himself, you know, this massive multimedia business, if you like, when it comes to the cars. You know, everything on from TVs, on the billboards. And he's even at this stage now battling other giants who are trying to steal his thunder. And, you know, a lot of that's a lot of fun too, folks, got to say. But also an amazing group of little co-stars as well in the rival team, which we're going to talk about, because there's some really funny scenes, particularly when he goes over there to tell them off and he goes, "Would you like a boba?" And no, we're not talking about Boba Fett. We're talking about a boba tea, you know, the iced teas. And it's great. It's great scenes. Fantastic. So the series obviously is heavily based around the martial arts of the films. And of course, the influence that has on their training and the way that they're trained. It's both a comedy and a drama and an action comedy too, folks. You know, it's got a bit of everything. Now, the stars are Ralph and, of course, William. We've also got Courtney Hengeler. We've got Zolo Maraduena. And we've got Tanner Buchanan, Mary Mouser, Jacob Bertrand, Gianni DiCenzo, Martin Cove, Vanessa Rubio, and, of course, Peyton List as well. Currently, three seasons in, but obviously just about to release here at the end of December with the new season, which I'm going to literally just gobble up as much as I can on Netflix as fast as I can. Producers on this series, interesting. We've got, obviously, Ralph and William both involved as producers. We've got Josh, John, and Hayden, as we mentioned earlier. But we also have, and this is where it gets interesting, Susan Eakins, Will Smith, James Lasseter, and Caleb Pinkett. Interesting, isn't it? So quite a few people involved. Obviously, Will Smith was involved in the reboot of The Karate Kid, which was based in China. Didn't use karate, used kung fu. Now, a lot of people went, "Oh, why didn't they just call it your Kung Fu Kid?" Well, I hate to tell you folks, but karate is kung fu, and kung fu is karate. Okay? You know, that has the same legacy, they have the same lineage. And as far as I see it, you know, it is part and parcel. Obviously, Will Smith's son was involved in that film, and of course, the amazing Jackie Chan. Yes, Jackie Chan. Yeah, and of course, the Iron Monkey, folks. Yes, you've heard about it. We've talked about it. Yu Ronggong played the rival Sifu, or teacher. And he was just amazing in that one, too. He played quite a hammy, tough villain in that one, too. It was stirring things up. But again, it had the same cornerstones of The Karate Kid, which makes it franchise so fun. But yes, now we've got his father, of course, Will, involved in the series too. So it started on YouTube Red for the first season and then jumped to YouTube Premium in season two. But out after that, Netflix went in and bought, obviously, the series, and it's upgraded everything. Obviously, YouTube format is a little bit limited in terms of audio, so they were using stereo. But in this version now, you get Dolby 5.1. So it's quite interesting that that's sort of pumped through that way too. Now, it's been out for a few years now. 2018 was when it first launched, which is quite interesting. But I tell you what, this is one of the most popular shows out there. And not just for people like myself who grew up on the films. It's become a real one that families are enjoying. I've got people that work for me and my my business who we go like, oh, Karate Kid's great. What's it like doing karate to me? And you know, and I'm sort of telling them that it's not quite like the Karate Kid or Cobra Kai, but it's also pretty awesome too. So anyway, let's get into a little bit of the story about what this series is all about. Set 34 years after being defeated by Daniel LaRusso, Johnny Lawrence, who's somebody now that is in his mid to late 50s, is a handyman working in Reseda, Los Angeles, and has basically fallen on hard times. He's somebody who can't get steady work. He's putting up with having to fix a lot of wealthy people's homes and stuff like that too. And basically, he's going from paycheck to paycheck, and he's not having a good time. He remembers the old days from all the way back in, of course, the 84 All-Valley Karate Tournament, when he was the Ducks Nuts, and of course, he had everything. He had the woman of his dreams, he had the team behind him, and of course, he had, of course, the dojo, of course, being the one and only Cobra Kai. So what's interesting in this is we get to see basically a kind of, if you like, redemption of his character to a certain degree, because he's trying to give back, he's also trying to get back on his feet, but you can only get back so much if your teachers are the way they are, and of course they teach you their lessons to you. And that's what's interesting. From here, while he's living in his apartment area, he runs into a character by the name of Miguel Diaz, who's his neighbor, and he rescues him from a group of bullies basically using traditional karate, which these guys have not seen before. Because you look at the modern day, what do we see? Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, MMA. We get to see all these hybrid martial arts, which are have been pretty much the cornerstone of teenagers and early 20s martial artists these days. So to see something like traditional karate being used to save his life, Miguel's like, wow, what is that? From here, he gets to know Miguel and basically starts to take him on as a student, reluctantly at first, but starts to bring him into his confidence and grow him as a person. So he also sees Johnny Lawrence as kind of a father figure that he doesn't have because his father's not around anymore, which makes it interesting too. Daniel, however, is on the other end of the spectrum where he's a highly successful car chain owner. So he owns everything from, obviously, the cars, the yards themselves, to all the advertising, etc., like that too. And he's also married to the owner of the yards. That is, of course, Amanda. And they've got two kids, Samantha and Anthony. So he's got everything he could ever want. And as wealthy as he is, he's living in Reseda, which he always wanted to be in. From here, he's basically by himself. Miyagi has passed away many years before. And from here, he doesn't really have the sort of guidance that he had when Miyagi was still alive. So Daniel's a little lost. Even though he's got everything he needs, he's got everything he would want, he doesn't have that mentor figure to talk to anymore. So he has to find the power within himself through his old training in Goju-Ryu with Miyagi in Miyagi-Do and really get where it needs to. So Johnny reopens Cobra Kai. And from here, he takes on people that have been bullied, people that are just basically not treated well, and from whether it's a school background, home background, whatever it is, or on the streets, and starts to teach them the rough and tough of Cobra Kai and get through that. From here, we also find that John Kreese may still be around as well, and it's something that we find out later in the series, in season two in particular, that Kreese is not only easy around, but he's back. So, but the first season deals with basically Johnny getting Cobra Kai back to what it should have been and what it should still be, which is a dojo teaching kids how to do self-defense. Maybe not the way that traditional karate should be taught. And again, this whole series deals with, you know, whether a teacher themselves are teaching the right lessons, you know, mentors passing off, you know, experiences that may not have been the right ones to teach, you know, the next part of their lineage too. And that's what's interesting too. So we also meet some new students as well. So we have with this, Robbie convincing Amanda to hire him for a position at the LaRusso Auto Dealership. Robbie, of course, being the son of Johnny Lawrence. So we get this part where we see basically the son of Johnny Lawrence going in and learning eventually down the lines the ways of the Miyagi-Do karate. So it's, I think the spin that the writers are trying to do on that one was to see with, you know, it doesn't matter who, you know, your parents are, who your, you know, your father is. At the end of the day, it's about who is actually teaching you in life and who the real mentor is. Because we actually get to see him grow into quite a great student of karate. And particularly as we go through to the end of the first season, the All Valley Karate Championships, we get to see that. All right, folks, here's the cast. We've got Courtney Hengeler playing Amanda LaRusso, of course, the wife to Daniel. And she's definitely the commanding presence in the family and kind of the moral compass, if you like, too. Mary Mouser plays Samantha LaRusso, and Tanner Buchanan plays Robbie Keane. He's quite good, actually, Tanner, in this, as well as, gotta say, Mary, very good in this, too. And kind of, they're at a point where both of them are trying to figure out where they are in life, as well as trying to deal with kind of the legacies of their parents and stuff like that too. We've got as Miguel Diaz, Zolo Mariduana. We've also got William Zabka playing Johnny Lawrence. Jacob Bertrand playing Eli Hawk Moskowitz. One of the more interesting characters, and one that certainly doesn't take any gruff. He's certainly somebody that's tough and won't put up with anything. Gianni DiCenzo plays Dimitri, and of course, returning as John Kreese, Martin Cove. We have Vanessa Rubio playing Carmen, and of course, Peyton List playing Tori Nichols, who's very good in this, actually. Her karate's really, really strong, too. So we also have Nicole Brown as Aisha Robinson. We also have Hannah Kempel as Moon, Joe Cio as Kyla, and of course, we have also Griffin Santa Pietro as Anthony. Other, of course, returning, we've got Thomasine Griffith. And we've got also, through archival footage, some of the others that you'll also know quite well. We've got Pat Morita as Mr. Miyagi. Chad McQueen coming back as Dutch in the archival footage only. Danny Kemakona as Sato Taguchi. We also have Nobu McCarthy playing Yuki. Sean Kanan as Mike Barnes. And Sean, I know, is certainly somebody that's trying to, you know, definitely promote karate and, of course, you know, the abilities the martial arts has and stuff like that. And to his time in obviously playing a member of the Cobra Kai, and I dare say maybe somebody that's tougher than Johnny Lawrence. And, of course, Mike Barnes, I want to see doing a round two with Daniel LaRusso. So let's get him in the series proper, season five, hey? Robin Lively also as Jessica Andrews, which is interesting too. So it's great to see that we've also got Tracy Taguchi as Yuna in Miyagi-Do Season 3 as well. Tamlin Tamita as Kimiko. And obviously Yuji Okamoto, who we've talked about before, as Chosen Taguchi. The other one too is interesting. We've also got in this Elizabeth Shue returning in Season 3, which is great because she kind of obviously is not only a character that, you know, is pivotal to the series, particularly the first film, but very much so to the characters of Daniel and, of course, of and Johnny, because she was basically being fought over by both in the first film. So it was certainly something that was great to see in season three that she's come back. And, you know, she, again, is her own person. She's tough as nails, as always. So next, let's look at some of the trivia of this series, because it is very interesting. John G. Avildsen, who directed the Karate Kid movies, shot hours and hours of tournament footage. And, of course, he did it from multiple cameras and multiple angles. And the crew of the Cobra Kai itself went into the vaults and found everything from never-before-seen clips, flashbacks, and just different ways that they could then put that up into the series. And, of course, you get even the end of the film, new crane kick footage as well too. Daniel's car in season two is the actual same car from the Karate Kid in 84, because Macchio actually has the car, so check that out too. The ribbon that Daniel wears when he decides to train karate again is the ribbon given from the Karate Kid. And again, it's one in his private collection as well. He kept as well. At the release of this series, Ralph Macchio was actually 56 years old. So he's over 60 years of age now, folks, if you can believe that. It's crazy, isn't it? In real life, Macchio and Zabka became friends. This is after they worked on the Karate Kid film and after it was completed. And basically, Macchio said they became even closer friends after Marita had passed away. So it sounds like these guys had always wanted to get back together and work together. And it's great to see that they're good pals. Ralph Macchio and Zabka themselves state that even though most of the scenes were together in the original Karate Kid, they were either arguing or Macchio was getting his ass kicked. They were always friendly on the set together. So it looks like they've had, just had a friendship since 1984, which I think is absolutely lovely. Of all the Cobra Kai students, most of them have experience in martial arts. Most of them black belts or advanced trainers, trained dancers as well. You hear that a lot in action films and martial arts films. If people, you know, have a dance background or are dancers currently, they can definitely mimic the moves of martial arts because, again, it's, you know, it's choreography at the end of the day too. Johnny lives in Reseda Heights Apartments, the apartment complex that's basically location is similar to the LaRusso apartments from the original Karate Kid film. And this is obviously to show a flip side of what basically happened in the lives of those guys after the All Valley tournament. When the yoga class enters the Cobra Kai dojo, the first pose they do is the Cobra. There you go. Isn't that interesting? Bill Conti's music from the first movie, as well as some songs from the soundtrack, have been used in the show as well. And that's a great soundtrack. If you ever get a chance to get it, it's about 10 tracks. It really is a slice of 80s, which, you know, you turn it on and you're immediately transported back to 84. That's how good those songs are and how good the series is. You know, it really does that too. Most of the students were named after members of the crew. That is the Cobra Kai students, which, you know, interesting thing to do and, you know, respect to them. The movie Johnny Lawrence is watching in the TV's first episode is Iron Eagle. And Rob Garrison, who played Tommy, a fellow student, also appeared as Packer in that film as well. And that's true, actually. Great one, which we've covered here quite a while ago with Kyle Wagner of FPN. Sean Kane has expressed interest to return as Mike Barnes, and so he should. He still trains in martial arts to this day, folks, so let's get him in there. Chad McQueen, who played Dutch in The Karate Kid, declined to return to the show. Now, I think part of the reason that Chad did that is because he's not acting anymore. He'd become an actor like his father, Steve, and you know, went into actually doing action films and stuff like that, and even did Martial Law 1 with Cynthia Rothrock, and it's a great film. I think he does. He might not be quite Jean-Claude Van Damme or Chuck Norris, but he's a perfectly good martial artist, I think, on screen. But I think, again, his passion was elsewhere. You know, he likes racing cars, sports cars, and of course that's what he's sort of followed instead, and definitely something to look at. So the first season, folks, definitely deals with where people are in terms of things. So it plays on the idea that, you know, the bully was Daniel's son. and then from there, the second season is about them coming to terms with the legacy of their teachers and then growing their respective schools. As we head into the third season, it's also about those schools sort of, you know, letting go of their legacy and definitely going in a different direction, I think. And one being that also we get the school that Johnny Lawrence starts himself as Kreese comes back and basically steals out from under him Cobra Kai, which technically is probably his school originally. but all the hard work that Johnny had done basically came undone. So we get to see Daniel and, and to see Johnny working together, which is great. It's something you always wanted to see, particularly after the start of Karate Kid 2, where you get to see them sort of seeing eye to eye to a certain extent too. And I think that should have been played on more. These first two seasons are a whopping 4 out of 5 on the Hallenbach scale.